We must all stand in love for the tribe. That is the only way we will survive. But what if we don't? What if in my lifetime we all just fade away? Then you will have to explain that to your ancestors when you face them. Mm-hmm. My name is Echokais. I am a Mohegan. I study Shakespeare. Most people don't like talking about colonialism as much as they like talking about Shakespeare. Today's story isn't about Shakespeare, though. Today's story is how I became a bird. I need a fresh start. Somewhere I'm not hated for being me. The settlers killed something in our souls when they took our language. I look at my wings, wondering if they'll ever work, wondering if they even know what they are. Can someone tell me where I'm going?
They don't care about balance, stability, community, peace. They care about women.
I've been trying to remember a story. A long time ago, our ancestors told it to us. I think it has to do with where we belong. In the sky, one world might be clear. The closer you get to something, it's always more complicated on the ground.
Hello, I'm Tyler Nogoyo, and you're listening to From Here with a View, a We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast. We just watched the trailer for Where We Belong by Madeline Sayet. And our special guest here today is Madeline Sayet. Madeline Sayet is a Mohegan theater maker who believes the stories we pass down inform our collective possible futures. She serves as an assistant professor at Arizona State University with the Arizona Center for Medieval and Renaissance Studies and is the executive director of the Yale Indigenous Performing Arts Program. She has been honored as a Forbes 30 Under 30 in Hollywood and Entertainment, TED Fellow, MIT Media Lab Directors Fellow, National Directing Fellow, Drama League Director in Residence, NCAIED Native American 40 Under 40, and a recipient of the White House Champion of Change Award from President Obama. Her plays include Where We Belong and Up and Down the River. Where We Belong is published by Bloomsbury. It will be available in paperback in August 2022. Welcome, Madeline Sayet. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here, to be able to speak with you.
And where are you joining us from?
I'm zooming in from my traditional lands in Connecticut. I'm a citizen of the Mohegan tribe, and I'm happy to be here at home for a little bit in between tour stops for the show.
So let's talk about Where We Belong. When we first met, it was through your show here at the Philadelphia Theater Company. How did that happen? How did that come to be? And how was it to start the show in the city of Philadelphia?
So Where We Belong was originally performed at Shakespeare's Globe in 2019, and it was so vulnerable and scary to do it at that point that it kind of made me physically sick because the events of the play were still so close. And so initially when someone was like, do you want to do this again? I was like, absolutely not. There's no way I'm ever doing this again. But we initially agreed to do like three performances at Woolly Mammoth in DC in 2020. But that ultimately ended up being, you know, of course, the everything went virtual or got canceled due to the pandemic. And so Woolly Mammoth decided instead to release a filmed streaming version. And what that meant was that there was a lot more accessibility to it, theaters could see it, and it created a kind of hype that led to this national tour because a lot of theaters became interested in the work. But I was really concerned as a Native person who specifically, you know, usually isn't a playwright or performer, usually I'm a director working with other artists. I was really concerned by this idea of a tour and what that might mean, because I was really concerned that basically the show would be coming in and displacing local Native artists from their work being produced in the area. And so I wanted to make sure that there were things that were required of the institutions that the tour went to make sure that they're required to be partnering with local, you know, Native organizations and Native artists to make sure that those relationships are being built. So if the tour is going to come, it's a stepping stone toward local Native playwrights getting produced in those theaters, as opposed to, you know, another act of erasure, which we have plenty of. But Philly, basically sign on to be the first tour stop. And that was really exciting. That's how I got to meet you. And it's interesting because we're also learning, you know, as we go from stop to stop, a lot of these theaters have never produced a Native show before. They've never worked with Native artists before. And so each tour stop we go on, I'm also learning about how to facilitate like better communication too between like the organizations and the community and things like that. And so it's been really exciting to get to work with you and to get to work with Philadelphia Theater Company in that first stop as we're sort of like figuring out what all of this is.
So I feel like that's a lot to take on because your play, your work, your show itself is very heavy and intense, and it tells a very deep story and takes the audience on a path that's really important. There's a lot of knowledge that the audience comes away with. But aside from that, just the physical and emotional toll that must take on you being the only performer in the show, I was just really amazed that you had the thoughtfulness of and the capacity, which you may argue with, but the capacity to do all the things that you just mentioned and to take the time. And that's really incredible. This says a lot about you and how you think about the world. You know, and honestly, I think it's really, it's commendable because you're not just focused on yourself or your own work or your own success, because and as we know, our success, we feed off of each other and we help each other and we lift each other up. But how did you find, as your first show in Philadelphia and doing that community work, did it flow well for you? Was it difficult? Did you find that you had enough capacity to do both?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question. I think that the first stop in Philly, I think, was harder because it was also me getting used to performing the show a bunch of times. And so I was learning how to perform the show also. And ultimately, to be honest, I think that I could have been better about following up regularly with the theater to make sure. I think that there's a lot of nervousness in a lot of predominantly white institutions around, like, if we give them a list of things that they're supposed to be doing, not checking in and thinking, we did it, we're doing it. Instead of actually, like, you know, the traditional way of doing things is really to, like, be in constant dialogue about them to make sure they're being done in a good way. And so for me, to be honest, like, I was very resistant to the idea of touring. I didn't actually want to tour until I understood that there was some sort of transformational capacity to the tour itself. Because the idea of performing things I didn't enjoy going through the first time, like over and over again, I was like, I don't know about that. But what I really like and what I'm really passionate about, which is why, like, so much of my work is as a director, is bringing Native artists together and hearing and sharing their stories. And so for me, like, the moment of the tour in Philly that suddenly I was like, oh, right, this is why I'm doing the tour, was the moment when we had brilliant Native writers come into that theater space and read their work. And in addition to being inspired by their writing, also I could sense the space shift. Like, that space then suddenly actually became a safer space for me to perform in. It became a space where the people who were showing up were interested and excited about Native stories, you know. I felt like that audience was by far the best audience I had. And part of the reason why, you know, Native audiences get free tickets to the show isn't just because, you know, like, obviously, well, they always should. But anyway, it's a Native play. And, you know, the theaters need to work to partner with folks that they have them bring to theater. But honestly, for me, the show is so much easier to perform. Even if I haven't been told there's Native people, I can tell physically on stage, like, when there's other Native people there. Because it's the difference between, like, there being some people out there where you can sense it's resonating with them versus, like, a bunch of people kind of watching you as an object trying to figure out, like, what is this girl going through? So for me, it's like the things that I actually really value about this process are getting to meet, like, people doing incredible work, you know, in their communities like you are, and all of these different writers. And I'm actually really excited about going to Chicago because I think in the case of Philly, I was very scared. Not scared. I was nervous about having things too close to the beginning of it because we were launching tech for the first time. So it was like a longer tech process and more previews in Philly. Whereas this one, everything's more condensed, which means a lot of those events with the community are happening earlier in the run. And that actually is, like, very exciting to me because I'm like, oh, I'll be surrounded by other Native people so much sooner as opposed to feeling, like, incredibly isolated. the way we were able to organize the community event is that, you know, I suggested, because there's a day where there's a matinee of a reading of Dylan Chitto's incredibly credible play, Pueblo Revolt, and where there's an evening performance of my play. So I was like, oh, let's put the community thing just in between. So it's like people coming to either thing can just come and hang out, as opposed to feeling like we have to try and like gather people separately, which is so hard, you know? So, I'm learning and trying to figure out like, how do we actually use this tour as an opportunity to continue to build native theater, as opposed to, yeah, like it becoming about me, which I think is like my great fear, because I'm not normally a performer, is that everyone's going to be like just watching me for months at a time, which is a little bit inevitable, but I'm trying not to think about it.
Yeah, that's inevitable. I mean, that's the whole point. So for the listeners and viewers who are not familiar with Where We Belong, I'd love for if you could share some background on how it came to be and what the main themes are for you and why it's meaningful for your community.
Sure, yeah. So I started writing Where We Belong originally not thinking it was going to be a play, just as something sort of to process some of the things that I was thinking about and going through when I first moved back from the UK in 2018 after having moved there to pursue a PhD in Shakespeare. And it was a really strange moment for me because it was the first time that I came back to Mohegan and my feet didn't root quite right to the ground. Like up until then, it was like I always came home to my traditional lands and it was like, oh, this is where I belong. This is the place of my ancestors. Like I felt so grounded. And I was thinking about my Mohegan name, which means blackbird. And I was thinking about that perspective and what does it mean to be flying, flying, flying constantly? And how does that change your framing of sort of the world around you, because at that moment in my life, I'd been constantly in the sky and thinking about things from not just even going back and forth between London and home. And I was trying to figure out what that was. And I was thinking about traditional storytelling and, you know, the act of just a person with an audience, with a community, telling a story and then seeing sort of what that framework would do of just bringing together a couple different moments in my ancestors' histories. Because I have multiple Mohegan ancestors who had to go to London in the 1700s on diplomatic missions for our people, and what I might learn by like going through their journeys, because their journeys became very important to me while I was overseas. You know, knowing that, yeah, you might be the only Mohegan in London, but that there are other people who did this first, really I found very, very supportive to me as an understanding while I moved through those like all white academic spaces. And so I was trying to piece all of this together and piece it together through a bit of this framework of a wolf that becomes a bird. And so there's a lot in the play about the construction of borders and how nations are divided. There's a lot in the play about Shakespeare, about language, about colonialism, about, you know, Mohegan history. And really, it's sort of just woven all together through me and my personal experience, almost as a kind of coming of age story, because I've learned now that when the play is sort of functioning at its best, like the audience can kind of, and I can kind of see me grow up, and I kind of inside of it feel myself like growing up as I move through it, which is like really interesting inside of it, because I have to, right? I have to believe what I believed when I was 17 in order for the play to kind of make sense. But yeah, so a lot of the themes of the play are about language. There's quite a bit in it about repatriation, ideas of what is valued in society, you know, colonized society versus, you know, our traditional societies. And thinking about, you know, now where we are now in time, where do we go from here?
Thank you. When you were in Philly, you had mentioned, and you mentioned this just before, about the different audiences. You had mentioned there was a story where an audience felt like they maybe weren't so receptive or it was hard for them to take in. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can explain it exactly, but I
can you tell the story? Maybe you don't know. Mm-hmm. Can't explain it from their perspective, but...
Yeah, it was interesting because I hadn't fully experienced what it might be to do this in different theaters without the theaters really understanding what it is that they're walking into. And I think that sometimes one of the tricky things about the play is that because, like, the reason I go to the UK is to pursue a PhD in Shakespeare, it kind of gets marketed a little bit in this, like, Shakespeare-adjacent way, where people don't really understand that they're, you know, coming to see a play that is very much a native play, that is very much, you know, in direct dialogue with colonialism, that is maybe, you know, has a lot of ideas in it that they've never heard before. And so it's been really interesting for me because there were certain times in Philly where there was one audience where I just remember it was like looking out into this like vast sea of only older white folks, and none of them got it. And that was a part of why I was like, oh, we really need to make sure that there's at least a few, even if not native folks, colonized peoples, you know, in the audience, because they listen differently when someone else is responding. But when it was just that one audience of like all like predominantly, you know, white folks who are probably subscribers of the theater, didn't necessarily come to see this because it was something they were interested in, but just because it was something that they sign up for annually, it was really hard because I felt like an object on display, and I could actually kind of feel. And then there was one review that was from that night, and I was like, I was right, I wasn't crazy, because they were very angry. But it was, I could feel that they, like, things I was saying were making them mad. And I was like, I don't know what to do. Because it was just such an interesting thing of being like, usually, if I have a different audience in real life, like, if I know in real life, I'm going to have a certain audience, I do adjust my talks, my lectures and things slightly to try and, you know, meet them in a slightly different point. But because it's my own life, it was really, really difficult to be in that space, because I was like, oh, here I am, like, fictional, you know, in the play, Maddie, going on this journey of really trying to get people to understand and care, and then it not happening. And then at the same time in real life, I'm like trying to get people to understand and care and can feel it's not happening. And so it was really interesting to be in that space, but then also to be like, okay, yeah, like, this play isn't for everyone. So how are we actually making sure that the people who it's for are the people that we're reaching? And that actually was like a really important producing lesson for me, because, you know, it's like there are Philly audiences who this play is for. And there are people who were in that audience that night who were like, no, we got to figure out how to get those people here, because those people would be really excited about the show. And I, you know, I grew up going to mainstream, predominantly white institutions, you know, like, I know what some of them expect. And it's like, this is not, I mean, like, it, even as a native play, it's not the most mainstream play. Like, it's very poetic, it's very abstract. And so, yeah, that was a really interesting lesson. But it also was like that point on when I was like, I need my native audiences here. Because even just a couple native people in the audience, when they laugh, when they breathe, when they sigh, when they, like, you know, it changes. Then it's like it teaches the rest of the audience how to listen and how to actually engage with the story in a weird way.
That's very true, that energy. And it goes back and forth. And I think a lot of times I've noticed going to plays and shows that a lot of people go to be entertained. I mean, and that's it. And they're not expecting anything beyond that, unless you're going to like a very small playhouse where you're an independent theater and you understand what you're walking into. So that's very amazing that you got through it and that you remained strong. And it's so true what you're saying. If you go out and you're speaking to people, you can meet them where they are and you can kind of customize and understand what they're capable of taking in. And this you couldn't. This you're on the stage, and the set and the sound are so powerful, and they're players in this show as well. And I think there was one scene where it just turned me around. I was just like, whew. And with the lights and the sounds, and it just was absolutely chilling and moving and told the whole story, like in those moments. And I can imagine that could be jarring for someone not expecting it. But at the same time, you know, it's okay. Like, people need to be in places where they're not totally comfortable. I mean, we for sure have been in places where we're not totally comfortable our entire lives. So it's okay.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I was able to, like, after that day, at first I was like, you know, it's structured in this way where, like, the first half has a lot of jokes and the second half is very serious, sort of in terms of the play structure. And so I think it was actually in some ways harder in the first half, because I was like, oh no, they don't do jokes about colonialism.
I mean, they are proud of it. Like, this is not. But then it was that thing of like at the end, yeah, realizing like, even if they were confused or at certain moments like defensive, they probably still learned something, even much, you know, against their will. And so actually, like, even for those audiences, I do think it's really useful. Is it easier for me? No. But ultimately, like, now that I've been doing it more, I've started to sort of realize, like, okay, I think it's harder because I can see their faces. But and I think that they forget that I can see them too, you know. But that's what storytelling is, you know. It's an exchange between peoples. And so, like, the story changes in relationship with the audience, and that's just going to keep being what happens.
Yes, absolutely. And I that resonates with me in my work too, because at first when we were starting this organization, it felt like we had to be so delicate and really appease, you know, people. And now I'm so busy and I really don't have the time for those kind of formalities. And the truth is the truth. And so I can walk into a room and be like, no, that's not working, or this is not right, and you need to turn this around. And I realized that that's why they partner with us. Like, this is why they need us here, right? And so I love that with each step of the way, it's like affirming what you're doing. You're teaching now, and you're in Arizona. You've made a big life change, and you're on tour. So how is all of this working together for you?
Yeah, I don't really know yet. I'm learning. I think... I'm interested in, so yeah, in the spring, there's a period where I'm not on tour and I get to teach contemporary Native drama at ASU, which I'm really excited about because, you know, it's an opportunity to really talk about the breadth of that field and not try and synthesize it, right? But to actually be in a space with lots of other, you know, Native people, because like ASU has more than 4,000 Native students and more than 60 Native professors, and talk about sovereignty, you know, talk about like not try and make the course monolithic, right? I feel like the tendency of so much of academia is to be like, this is how all Native plays are the same. When in reality, it's like, not only do we have like more than 570 federally recognized tribes, we also have all of, you know, state recognized tribes, et cetera. Plus we have like different playwrights in all of those tribal nations who don't have the same aesthetic taste as each other. And so it's really actually about being able to like also bring in those playwrights to the conversations with my students so that they're actually learning about, you know, the breadth of this artistry, which I think is so exciting right now because so much of the work is really telling stories about the places that we're in, about the lands that we're on. And they've never been exposed to, well, obviously the Native students have, but like non-Native students have never even been exposed to the philosophy of all of these, you know, cultures, let alone their artwork. So that's really exciting for me. For me, the ways in which I feel like that's coupled to the tour is I get to kind of see, as a Native theater artist, I was working in New York for like 8 years before I, you know, started traveling for work. So I feel like I have some understanding of like the urban Indian community and the Native theater culture in New York City, but I don't actually really, I've never worked in Chicago. I've never worked in these other cities. And so it's actually really exciting for me because I get to see a little bit on the ground what everybody's been doing in all of these other centers, which is really exciting in the hope that ultimately through all of my other work that I can continue to promote that. And that hopefully them having done this work that's in the accountability rider and committed to these future partnerships with, you know, the Native folks around them will hopefully lead to more Native works being produced at all of these theaters. Like, that's really my hope. And it's interesting because it's like, you know, there's this part in the rider where they're supposed to acknowledge, you know, their history of red face at their institutions. And some of the institutions have been like, oh, well, you know, we didn't do red face. And it's like, well, okay, fine. You didn't literally, your theater company didn't literally do red face, but you've never had any Native representation on your stage like since the founding. So it's like, there's an act of erasure happening either way in all of these spaces, like across the board, which is, I mean, it's been harmful. Like, we know it's been harmful. Like, I, as a Native theater artist, am not alone in that, like, I didn't actually know Native theater existed until I was, like, well into college, because you're not taught about it, right? Like, in schools, you don't get to learn about Native plays, even in drama schools, usually, you know? So anyway, so I just feel like there's so much work to be done. And I feel like institutions are starting to understand also that these are all really good plays, which I feel like is also part of it. They're like, oh, yes, the Native plays are actually
better, interesting. Like, you know, like once they produce one, they tend to produce more because their like minds are blown by how many cool stories we have. So I'm just really hopeful that the capacity of this tour will, one, connect me with lots of cool people that I wouldn't otherwise have met. But then in addition to that, it really does begin to bridge more and more of the divides between these predominantly white institutions as they, you know, some of them become less white centered. And then in addition to that, really find ways to continue to uplift all of these incredible Native artists in all of these different communities.
That's absolutely incredible, really. And your work will have a ripple effect and go on forever in that way. It's amazing what each step you're taking is doing to open up a space for Native peoples. Let's talk about New York, because the New York theater community, just, you know, I've been to plays in New York. I know a lot of Native folks in the theater community there, and you've directed plays with Indigenous casts. And what has that experience been like?
Yeah, I mean, so for me, it was like a big shift when I was an undergrad, because my final year of undergrad, NYU, Carmen Lara Eli was teaching this class on contemporary Native theater. And I just remember being like, whoa, we have a theater. Like, I know that sounds stupid. It's like, I didn't know, like, we had a canon, you know, suddenly it was like, we had a canon of work in which like our voices were centered. And so for me in that classroom, I remember the like palpable cultural shift to being like normal instead of on the outside of what was being taught. And also the fact that because it was then taught as a canon, like everybody who was taught in that class their work, like they were like superstars to me. Because I remember basically what happened was the summer after that class, like when I graduated, my sister had forwarded me this call for Native actors to volunteer to be in a reading of a play by William Yellowrobe Jr. And at the time I was like, whoa, we read his play in class, like he's famous, you know? And so, but he was the one who got me involved in the theater community. And I remember like the first few times, like I was anywhere around Spider-Woman, I would like they'd be like, why don't you talk to them? Can't because they're famous. You know what I mean? Like it was like because I had seen their work in class, I was like, there. I mean, you know, it's incredible to be in a space where once I was aware of it, I was then conscious that there were these exciting works happening around me all the time, you know? And I feel like that's even more true now. Like I'm constantly hearing about more and more work being done in the New York Native theater community. I think especially because I had done some work with other Native artists, with non-Native directors, where I was like, oh, right. So the non-Native directors have set the bar really low. So all I have to do is show like my community a baseline of respect and maybe that I could be a director. So when I started directing, it really was that thing of just like being able to create a space where the people I cared about, we could all do work that we cared about together. And it was just so healing because it was liberating to not have to worry about non-Native cultural protocols, to be able to be like, oh, we can do things our way, you know, we can prioritize the things that are important to us. Was such a liberating way to begin my career as a director, because I feel like so many people, like they start in an MFA program or they start somewhere where they're trying to appease some white, you know, powers that be. But because like in my initial work was all in these organizations where it was like the mission was to support Native art, I was like, great, so we do whatever supporting Native artists. It was just so incredible, literally liberating in terms of how I actually started to frame how I think about how I behave as an artist. And like through this year's Yale Indigenous Performing Arts Programs Festival, like I can't be everywhere at once anymore. And so like one of the most exciting things for me was being able to be like, oh, this Native playwright's in New York now and this Native director's in New York. Oh, so if they work together on this reading, maybe then they will like continue to like, and then they will become best collaborators forever. And then they will make this amazing play and it will continue, you know, and it was just, that's what's really exciting to me is because like, there's so many super young Native theater artists now. And they're all doing such incredible work. And this legacy that, you know, people like Spider-Woman, like Bill have created, like Kanae, like all, you know, these icons have created, you can really see the way that like they pushing through this like tiny like space that they were able to make has now like created this incredible space for all of these young people. That's what really is like inspiring me right now is getting to read like, you know, plays by like super young playwrights and seeing how they're building and everything else. And I'm really excited for when the play goes to New York. You know, it's going to an institution that that we all like know has a very bad history. There's no other way to put it. So it's you know, it's going to the public, which you know, and I was very open. I was like, I'm not gonna pretend, like I'm not gonna not acknowledge what you did, you know, when we go there and do the show. And they were respectful of that, because I'm like, I can't, like, the play talks about red face. Do you know what I mean? And it's like one of the first instances of red face, of me witnessing red face as a person in college, you know, when I was younger, was Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson and the harm of that show, and you know, the harm that did to the Native theater community, and how it was something we had to fight back against for so long, is significant. And so I'm really conscious of also the fact that when I go and do the show in New York, like that's the space I'm walking into. And what does it mean to be trying to like counter that history as well? And in that space, also acknowledging, you know, the richness of the Native theater community, and that it's not like, oh, suddenly I've popped out of nowhere, right? But that actually, like, I have appeared here at this moment because of all of these people doing this work for so long.
I think it's really wonderful that you make all of these acknowledgments and look at the history and what's happening now and how things are shifting and changing. A lot of times you see folks in the current space saying things like, wow, like, for example, like in film right now, in film and television, there's incredible strides being made, and it's phenomenal. It's beautiful to see. But I don't see a lot of acknowledgement of the people who came before and who carved that space. And like you said, like there's a big, we're in this tiny, tiny, I loved how you did that, because you could feel it. That's exactly what it was like. It was like so confining, and people had to like push. And then all of a sudden there's space. And I am so just grateful for you for saying that and for acknowledging that there has been a path that has been laid, and you're jumping onto that path and creating more of a path. And it's absolutely beautiful.
Well, I think it's so important to acknowledge too, because like, I think about how I, as like a somewhat young artist, I get annoyed with having to have the same fight over and over and over and over again. And I'm like in my 30s. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I genuinely don't know how they did it. Like, I think about this like often, like how did they keep going? Like, how did they actually keep going when no one was saying good job, you know, like literally it was like, you know, they were being told to like, you know, go away, and they were being told that what they were doing,
no funding, no space, no opportunity.
There wasn't even always big acknowledgments from the community. Like, you know, it's like, but they thought it was important, and they kept going for so long. So maybe also like, you know, within theater, I feel like there is, because it's such a collaborative tradition, it's like almost impossible not to have worked with and seen the work of these people or directly interacted with it in some way, you know? But yeah, I think about how, yeah, like the frustration that I have, how they continued to move through that is like beyond me, you know, because they really carried something for so long on such a belief, you know, that what they were doing was worthwhile and that things would change. And I'm just really excited for the opportunities we have to, like, you know, continue to do their works and honor their works as well. There are people, like, I think about, like, Bill Yellerow recently when he passed away. Right before he passed away, he was about to get these two big theater awards. He knew he was about to get them when he passed, but, like, they came at the end, you know what I mean? It was like he was already on his way to passing over, you know? So I just keep thinking, okay, what can we do to, like, honor folks now? Because we have so many, I have so many opportunities. And me and Ty Defoe were talking recently about, like, we were trying to figure out what to do of our opportunity. We were like, yeah, what do you want to do? I don't know, what do you want to do? And then Ty was like we started laughing. It was like not very long ago. We're like, they didn't want Native theater artists to do anything. Like, and now it's like, we're just deciding which thing we want to do. You know what I mean? It's like crazy in contrast.
Yeah, it's quite a shift, definitely. So you're home now, you're in your homelands. What are the good things?
The good things, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the good things, yeah. I mean, seeing family, honestly, right now just is good. And also I'm working on projects, to be honest. I would like to pretend like but there's a project that's for Longworth, that's like a co-commissioning project with a couple other Mohican artists and a Pequot artist called Stories of the Land that I'm working on, where we're like looking at stories that the land wants to tell, basically. You know, what are the stories of this place, but like specifically not of necessarily the people, but actually of the place. And our, you know, ongoing relationship with the place. It looks like Longworth is potentially going to do a reading of a of another Mohegan play that's not by me, which is exciting. So I'm really interested in figuring out how to continue to make sure that, like, for example, with that partnership, that me not being in Connecticut anymore, does it mean that they don't work with Native people? You know what I mean? So how do I make sure that I'm introducing them to other people so that there's no reason for that? But so I'm really kind of focused on that right now. But if it was up to me, what I would probably be doing today is going to hang out on the river and then driving to Sly Fox to go eat Sherry's cooking. But I'm not.
I'm like, you need to tell me about some food. I have to hear about what you're eating.
I know, right? I'm gonna be eating a lot of fish, really. You know, like that's what I'm eating while I'm home. Because that's the thing about moving to Arizona, you know, as a Northeastern native. It's like, you have given up the fish.
Definitely. Our family moved to Santa Fe, where my husband's family is from, and it's not the same. Well, I'm glad you have the chance to be home. You sound like you're on a whirlwind life doing incredible things. And I'm just grateful that you've made the space to talk to us today. And I'm so honored that you reached out in Philly and that we made that connection. And I'm thankful for all the work that you do.
Thank you. I'm super excited about all the work We Are the Seeds is doing, and I'm excited to see everything you guys do in Philly as well. It was great. I mean, even like the act of having art right in the space, like visual art that you can go and be with, is like, it changes the space. It really does. And I think it's really important when doing this kind of work too, because it's you know, so much of it, you know, these are our lands, and so much of it is actually about reclaiming space and the way that space operates. And so when you're in a space, right, that is like so clearly a colonial space, and then there's these acts of reclamation within that, that introduce you to new artists and new artworks, it's really, really, really powerful. So thank you for all of your work.
It was very beautiful. And so thank you for giving us the opportunity to do that, to put art in that space. Before we wrap it up, I would love for you to share about the publishing of Where We Belong and what the plans are.
Yes, so it's very exciting because plays don't actually get published as often as you'd think. But Where We Belong has been published by Metho and Drama with Bloomsbury. And so it's already out in the UK, and it's available for pre-order through, like, you know, Amazon and Bloomsbury now in the United States, because it comes out, I think, August 25th. But I'm really excited about that too, because it means that people will be able to talk about these things in classes and things like that within theater situations as well. And I feel like my favorite sort of response in some ways to Where We Belong so far critically was that, you know, there was a review of it in the Shakespeare Bulletin. They basically had to talk about, you know, language revitalization and repatriation in the Shakespeare Bulletin. And I was like, ha-ha, like I felt like I had won. Because I was like, great, like now they're talking about all these issues that are important to me in this other context. And so that's what I'm hoping it allows space for. And I'm also hoping it just allows space for, you know, people to question things and to engage with things in a way that they might not be able to if they hadn't been able to access the text. So
that's incredible. You've got it. You did it. Aha. Madeline Sayed, it's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to From Here with a View, a We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast. Thank you for joining us today. From Here with a View, a We Are the Seeds Philadelphia podcast is produced by Michelle St. John, with music by Zachariah Julian and original logo art by Jason Wiesaw. This podcast is funded in part by Independence Public Media Foundation.